Charles, how are things in the other London?
Excellent. It's great to be here. Thank you very much. It's 6 p.m. in the evening here, so it's getting a little dark, but I'm thrilled to be on the radio to Canada. So thank you very much for having me on.
Well, great to have you. A lot of people would say that you cannot take science and politics and put them in the same room and have them sit happily ever after. How do you examine politics using a kind of a scientific lens?
It's a really good question. I mean, the field that I've been looking at over the last couple of years, my background is physics, so unless something can be measured robustly, I'm really not that interested. So it was to my delight a couple of years ago that I found this new field of scientific approach to the study of wisdom, and that's looking at people who are able to take those decisions that we all recognize as wise. And, you know, we recognize it when we see it. We just have a lot of trouble defining it. So what's happened over the sort of last 10 years is scientists have kind of got together and said, you know, we've done this with creativity. We've done this with intelligence. Why not wisdom? It's so exciting for me because wisdom has been this sort of prize for generations and generations that has seemed outside the realm of science, so therefore out of my area of interest. But now that they're starting to get robust results on what looks like wise behavior, you know, can it be replicated? Can we learn from these wise people? So, yeah, it's really exciting. I agree with you. It did seem something that couldn't be approached by science, but the science is looking pretty good.
We might all have our own opinion, Charles, as to who is a wise person. A lot of us might point to our grandmother, our grandfather, someone who's been on this earth a long time. How do you quantify wisdom?
Again, that's a really good question. So many big questions come up with this topic. First thing to say is that people do, when the surveys are done, and it's like, tell me someone you think's wise, tell me someone you think's wise. Generally, we do gravitate around similar figures. You know, often Gandhi might be one, Martin Luther King might be one, Winston Churchill. So these are the kind of figures that people tend to sort of agree on. So it is encouraging, is it not, to see that we don't all have completely different ideas of who is wise as far as the data goes.
What would those characteristics be, though? There have to be something that pops up.
Yeah. So the kind of, I mean, there's a few different ways of looking at it, but and different researchers have slightly different ideas, but there's a few commonalities is what you're getting at, I think. And there's a few things that wise people typically do. One is they're really good at integrating intelligence with emotion. You've got to be smart to be wise. So you have, to be wise, you have to be intelligent, but if you're intelligent, you're not necessarily wise. And wise people are able to bring together intelligence and emotion. So that's the first thing they can do. The second thing they're really good at doing is looking at situations from multiple perspectives all at the same time. Whilst the rest of us often get trapped in one angle or one view, they're able to step outside their perspective and kind of see around the back of the problem, which gives them a much better understanding of what's going on. And finally, what's really key to this whole wisdom construct is none of this is used simply to advance their own interest. There is this central idea in wisdom. You're using your intelligence and your emotional understanding to do good, essentially, not just advance your situation, but to find the optimal solution for the group. And that's what quite often distinguishes wisdom from intelligence.
We're talking with Charles Cassidy, who right now is in the other London. Charles has expertise in political analysis, decision-making, and looks at it from a science-based perspective. So one of the things that you mentioned is having that open mind, being able to look and say, yeah, well, how are they seeing things? How are they seeing things? A lot of people, Charles, will, as they grow, develop their own belief system in politics, maybe develop their own political leaning. Is that okay? Or would you encourage those people to say, okay, you have your way of looking at things, but don't forget about that one and that one and that one?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not sort of trying to suggest people, you know, don't have an opinion, right? You have to have a perspective that you believe, on balance, is the most informed perspective. Now, we all think we have that. Now, the problem is you and me and everyone can only see, really, the situation from one perspective. So we get a limited understanding of what's going on. Now, what we've noticed from the science that wise people are able to do is view something from many different perspectives simultaneously, so that they really are going to get a much better clarity on the problem. So I, in this sort of Trump context, you know, that we all find ourselves affected by, I'm not suggesting that we all lurch to the left or to the right. You know, everyone will have their perspective, but we will all gain by taking the time to tap our adversaries for their perspective. They have something we can't possibly have, which is they're seeing it from round the back. So it's not, we're not compromising, we're not saying we even have to agree with them, but we need to view our adversaries not as noise, but, you know, a really valuable resource that we should be tapping for insight.
Charles Cassidy with us. Mike Stubbs in for Andrew Lawton on The Andrew Lawton Show. Charles, you've recently written an article that the title may have some people saying, wait a minute, right off the bat. But we encourage you to have a look at this, and I've posted it on my Twitter feed at StubbsAM980. It's entitled, What Would Gandhi Do About Trump? Give us the basics of what kind of caused you to look at Trump from the angle of Gandhi.
Yeah, I mean, my leaning is more towards the left, and Gandhi is often, you know, he's a figure of people often celebrated on the left, but he also, interestingly, always turns up near the tops of public surveys about, tell us a wise figure from the 20th century. So when I'm sort of coming back from this election party that has not turned out the way that I perhaps hoped it might, I was thinking about wisdom. And I was thinking of, you know, the kind of embodiment of this being, you know, this figure that often turns up in these surveys of Gandhi. I thought, what would he suggest we do in this context? How do we approach this new political landscape? Because a lot of us on the left and right, I think, are quite sort of surprised. We really get a sense we're in a new, it's a new landscape, it's a new territory. So where's the wise guidance? And I thought, Gandhi's not here, obviously, but the science of wisdom may have some insights that would give us an inclination about perhaps how we could approach this. So that's how I came to think about the rather strange juxtaposition of Gandhi and Trump.
How do you think Gandhi would deal with what is being said by Donald Trump?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't want to, you know, kind of go too far down the imagination line, but the two kind of key insights that seem relevant from the research to me is firstly this facility for consulting your adversaries. So let's not dig our heels in. Let's, you know, reach out to each other, not to compromise, but just to say, tell me how it looks from over there. Maybe that'll help me understand. So that's the first thing. We need to sit down with our adversaries and just, you know, use them, find out what they know that we don't. That's the first thing I think would be sensible for a wise figure to do. And the second thing is, you've got to have a plan, right? You've got to respond and say, this is what I think we should do in this situation. But hold on to it loosely. So that's another thing wise people are able to do. They are able to maintain a certain level of wise self-doubt. They have a plan, and they think it's the best plan, but they are aware that their view is limited, and should the situation change, they will update their perspective. So let's not have righteous indignation. Let's not be digging our heels in. Let's say, this is my perspective, but, you know, if something changes, I'll update it. So those are a couple of things that wise people in research have been shown to do. So, you know, it would be something that perhaps Gandhi would do himself.
We're talking with Charles Cassidy. Charles, one last thing. As far as as that definition of wisdom goes, how popular a belief do you think it is now and could be going forward?
Well, I mean, the thing about wisdom is that it's not an external scientific law like gravity. It is a human construct, so there's always going to be some gray area. There's going to be some back and forth about what it really is. But those elements that I mentioned before seem to be the bare essentials of all these different definitions. So integrating intelligence with emotion, seeing things from multiple perspectives, managing uncertainty, and using your resources to do good. These seem to be the common denominators of a number of different definitions that are out there. So I think that seems to be the core on which the future of wisdom research is going to be built.
Charles, look forward to reading more. Thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you, Mike. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.